Hello, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski, host of Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the do-gooders out there, the determined, the passionate, and purpose-driven, who are helping all of us to understand this ginormously disrupted world of work and learning. And today, in a special treat, we have someone who has been in the trenches of higher ed her entire career and brings so much insight into what's happening that is so disruptive in the world of higher ed, and in particular, in adult learning. Welcome to my show, Jill Blumen from the CEO of EdAssist. Jill, it is an honor and a privilege to have you on the show today.
Oh, Ron, thank you so much. And I appreciate the title, but I'm GM and VP of EdAssist, but you can think of me as CEO. I love it.
Okay. All right. In any event, though, you started out on your educational journey, you know, really participating in a full flare. I mean, your PhD is in adult education. And I'm kind of curious, you know, to have our listeners and viewers learn a little bit about what prompted you to get into education, because now you're so passionate about it. But what was it that originally brought you into it and helped move you along from PhD to purpose-driven, you know, icon in education?
Yeah. So I like that, an icon in education. Oh, Ron, this is a great day for me. Yeah. So I know it sounds like a long time ago, but about a little over 20 years ago, I was actually a high school teacher in upstate rural New York and had the opportunity to bring college classes to this high school and open doors for some seniors in high school who would never have taken a course. It was through Syracuse University. And so we allowed not only the AP students, but that, you know, typical B student, not the superstars, to take this course. And so doing that really helped me see how I could change learners' lives. Some, you know, went to community colleges, some went to college, some would have never done either without the confidence that that coursework built. And soon thereafter, I started teaching and mentoring adult learners at SUNY Empire State College. And I myself had a phenomenal mentor, Dr. Meg Benke, who is still on the faculty there, was provost, was interim president, just unbelievable, who believed in me and brought me along to work with her in the provost's office and said, you have to get your PhD. And so that's when I had this real passion for working with adults after working with so many over the couple of years I've been at Empire and seeing how education transformed their lives and going to graduations and seeing their kids cheering them on and, you know, bring out the tissues. Everybody's crying. And it's just a joyous moment. So those kind of factors all just led me to say, you know, why not focus on the developmental stages of an adult and making an impact for this, the millions of learners who, for some reason, stopped out of school and, you know, life got in the way like it does for a lot of us for different reasons, and try to impact them and get them on their ways to increase their, you know, financial, personal, and academic successes in their lives.
Well, you know, you touched on something that's really significant for people to understand, and that is that for people who get off the track of their education or what we might consider a traditional pathway, very oftentimes, you said it, life happens. You know, in America, we've created this negative myth that people who are high school dropouts or people who are, you know, ended at community college are people who are gangbangers, pregnant teens, you know, they're off the beaten path, and they're not. They're new Americans, many of them. They're working adults. They're people who had to pull out of their education for serious health issues or caregiving of someone with serious health or financial issues. We find this all the time. And so I recognize and see the passion you have for adults making that leap. When I think of the work you've done, I want to bring in some other names because I know you're familiar with them. But it's also curious that a lot of the executives that have really advanced education as a benefit in corporations are leading women in the ed tech space. And that's you at EdAssist. That's Lisa Schumacher at McDonald's. That's Jackie Canny, Ellie Bertani, and Donna Morris at Walmart, and you guys really ushered in something that was entirely new. And so I'm curious to you, you know, Lisa Schumacher, I worked with her when McDonald's decided to get serious about upskilling. And what I was struck by is how able Lisa was to move mountains in a large organization, and moved extremely quickly. And within a year, we were piloting a program that ultimately morphed into Archways to Opportunity. In a recent podcast, she shared that they've served over 75,000 adults. So when you think about that, and they're now a partner, Ed Assistant's now a partner with McDonald's, you know, what do you think it is that's driving companies to have pivoted away from this idea that they would educate only the high potential people in the organization to now making education available for a mass audience? I mean, that's significant.
Yeah, I certainly think, you know, EdAssist has been around, I think Urban Legend says 14 years, I'll give it 13 years, but has been in existence for quite some time. And as you mentioned, I think at that point in time, it was a nice to have benefit. Really, those seeking master's degrees already came in with a bachelor's degree. And now we're seeing this shift to it being a real strategic talent differentiator. Can we attract talent, retain talent? Can we upskill, reskill our employees through education, whether it's a full degree or skills-based learning? So this, I also think that the recent conversation, so one, I just mentioned kind of an outcome of COVID, during COVID related, the talent wars, they're still alive and well. And then also, I think this shift to the focus on, you know, is the degree still valid? And so many states and companies looking to shift from skills-based requirements from a degree and thinking about how we incorporate that. So with that comes a change in attitude of, we could be hanging on to good talent, those who are a good culture fit in our organization. We could be attracting other talent if we're looking for differentiators and offering different types of education to all of our employees and not just those who came in with a degree and are seeking management and senior administration levels. So it really opens up a world of opportunity. Right. And I'd also say, Ron, just to piggyback on that, for many of our clients, there is a high interest in diversity, you know, equality and inclusion. So this is a great way in terms of looking at DE&I objectives and, you know, what is the education's the great equalizer, right? So when you talk about inclusive environments, serving back your communities, first gen learners, those who would never have access to an education opportunity, it's a great way to meet those objectives and stay true to your mission and values in that area.
That's really significant. You know, when you were so you decided to go back and get your PhD and you decided to study and do research on adult learning. And what would you say in your experience and then your practice through working on the academic side and now for a corporation, what would you say is different and distinctive about the adult learning experience and how it has evolved over the last 10 years or so?
Absolutely. And I'll add a little known fact. My daughter was 3 when I went back for my PhD. So wow. I have that experience of being a working mom getting her degree. So oftentimes I'm able to have real conversations with learners too, because I still have nightmares about that, even though it was a decade ago. But definitely the thought that adult learners, and really focusing on the theory behind adult learning, is they come with all of this experience. They're at different developmental, both socially, emotionally, physically in their lives to be able to do the work to think about and apply their experiences to their degree. So it's been wonderful for me to see so many of these institutions, you know, like a Western Governors or University of Maryland Global Campus, Thomas Edison, get the kind of props and be highlighted for the work they've been doing for decades to really focus on adults, because they know that adult developmental and how adults learn and how they bring that experience, where prior to this kind of resurgence and renaissance around the working learner and adult learner, I think many institutions were trying to apply traditional models to working with adults, and that's, it just doesn't work as well. So, you know, while these few years around talent wars and obviously with the pandemic have been challenging, it's also, there's a, you know, a silver lining of we're learning so much more and we're putting a spotlight on what works well for adults and how they can be successful and how we can reach them as a market in higher ed.
That makes a lot of sense. Let me take you into these companies with whom you're partnering and get a sense from you about where this is going. So it seems to me the argument that it could well be made that the talent wars are only really starting, and that even I've heard from economic advisors doing their state of the state saying that even with an impending potential recession, we're going to see talent shortages for the foreseeable future because the boomers are retiring. That was the biggest generation. The generation following is much smaller. And do you see that among the partner organizations that you're working with, that they are in a war for talent?
Oh, absolutely. Roughly 30% of our client base is healthcare. So that's alive and and well, and will not stop. We have a suite of career pathways that focus on the highest need areas in healthcare organizations, and we can't keep those on the shelves with our clients. I mean, they're a way to attract, retain talent. They're a way for the learner to explore a career. What can I do if I become a medical assistant? What can I do if I simply go back and get my high school diploma and then want to become a nurse? So it's that exploration of those high need areas and a way that we hope we can help clients attract and retain. It's also for those jobs, you know, healthcare specifically, but across the spectrum where there's high burnout. You have a lot of employees who are a great culture fit and you want to retain them, but they are burnt out. So can they quickly upskill? Can they explore what it means to be a pediatric nurse instead of in a specialty nurse as opposed to a nurse? Can they explore what it means to get an MBA in business analytics as opposed to an MBA and fill a high need area as opposed to leaving the organization? So we see it across the spectrum. There's other large clients that the talent war is definitely there still, you know, financial services, government, that rounds out almost 60% with those three categories of our client base. And then you mentioned Lisa at McDonald's. The franchises are really interesting. We've, in addition to McDonald's, we have a couple of others as well in Dutch Brothers and Papa John's. And many of them look at, which I think is really interesting, the talent war to be much more brief. They're looking at attracting, retaining talent. You know, if it's 18 to 24 months, that's a win for them because in the franchise world, there's such a quick turnover that if an associate's degree or a 14-month high school diploma from Career Online High School can retain that long, they're happy. So I also think, sorry, I'm going a little off, Ron. This has shown a light on like a different, we talked about the initial corporate America seeking those with bachelor's degrees and increasing through to a master's and doctoral level. Well, I think we're also kind of turning the conversation around what does it mean to retain talent? It could mean that it's 15 months and that's a win, as opposed to that golden handshake, golden anniversary of, you know, 25, 30 years. So a lot of interesting things are happening. And I think it's all around this education space.
I completely concur. What's interesting about what you were saying a moment ago about DEI really resonates with me because in my participation with Lisa and in launching Archways to Opportunity, you know, the argument we tried to make to corporations 10, 15 years ago was the social impact, the corporate social responsibility. We need to, you know, we need to be more active in our DEI efforts, and education is a way to do that. And those arguments fell more flat. What it turned out was the engine for this explosive rise of a lot of these upskilling programs was economic. You know, you mentioned it. You know, if you're McDonald's and you have 850,000 employees and you're hiring 1 million people a year, that means you have over 100% turnover. And if you're paying $3,000 to $5,000 to hire each of them, when Lisa and I first started working together, 40% of the people that were coming into the program into McDonald's to be trained and onboarded, 40% of them had quit within 90 days of being trained for a position. You know, so that had to, you know, and that was considered for a long time, certainly among quick service restaurants, that was considered for a long time simply to be the cost of operating. And fortunately, because of mavericks like Lisa and others, they sort of tipped the, you know, they sort of tipped the scale and said, you know what, no more, no mas. We have to be more responsive to the employees. And it's at this point where, when I think about all the women who have been actually strong proponents of this, where I say, okay, it's time for us to take a step back. We need to let women run this whole thing because they're doing a much better job, you know. And so hats off to you and Lisa and the Jackie Cannies of the world, because you made it happen and you saw things, you know, as this talent war was reaching a crescendo and then advancing, you know, irrespective of the economy, just because we don't have enough people. So when you talk to some of these employers now, you're saying that, you know, they don't see a lessening of that. But are you seeing the impact that having educational access as part of their sort of overall employment package is having on them? And can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where, thank you, first of all, for mentioning with me with such greats and being able to kind of change the face of adult learning and these education benefits. But I do think, you know, where my mind is a lot of the time is it's not only creating the best package for these companies, for their employee type and their goals, but it's presenting that with quality providers, whether it be a boot camp or a master's degree, an associate's degree, high school, because to your point, we want these learners to be successful. From an education perspective, we know it takes so much for them to go back and take this chance on themselves and have the confidence to do that and shuffle their lives around to re-engage in education. So we want them to be successful. But we want them to be able to complete this educational journey so they can then, you know, contribute back to their families, their company, and to society as a whole. So with that, we're constantly thinking about not only the program we're creating, but that what's behind that program has to give the learner and the company the best opportunity to be successful. So, you know, we are seeing a lot of upward trends. I think the latest number I saw for 2022 was an 88% retention rate for clients, for learners across our client that's base amazing. In 22. Don't quote me, but I think it was 88. It could have been 86, right. But that's a great number. So
well, I think a great
these benefits can, you know, and then there's also this bucket I don't think we look at so much. And like the current generation is very interested in just learning different skills. And maybe they were a history major, but want to dabble in social media or digital marketing. So there's the edXs that can provide a quick upskilling and you can dabble in something. So I think this benefit is going to continue to evolve. And I call it kind of the nice to have learning that also can retain a lot of your workforce, because it feels great if your employer spends a few hundred dollars on you a year to have access to an edX or a Coursera database of learning or LinkedIn learning. And you can just dabble in whatever you want and quickly add a certification or a badge to your suite of skills. So I think that's something we haven't looked at, but that's going to become more and more relevant.
Well, I think there's two things in what you're saying. One is the quality vetting. I would imagine that you go through that process rather onerously when you find that a provider is not meeting certain standards. That's one of the things that comes with reckoning these things in the public, in the private sector, as opposed to the public sector, is the dimensions for quality are imperative that you meet, because as a business, you have KPIs, key performance indicators, and that has to do with the experience and the retention, or I'm assuming those providers are jettisoned or moved aside or asked to improve and go on some form of, you know,
it's challenging. Yeah, it's not an easy conversation because it's, you know, we're watching, there's so much going on, Ron. You hear the same things that I do every day in post-secondary right. ed. And so it's trying to keep abreast of that, trying to be knowledgeable, trying to really understand what's happening there, and then making educated recommendations to our clients. Most are thrilled to hear. Others just want to keep sending where they send. And we appreciate that and recognize that.
Well, I think sometimes, you know, my own observation to your point is that sometimes we have a sort of broad brush that we paint over this education sector. And part of the broad brush is not accurate, because we say, okay, you know, whenever I read an article in the Wall Street Journal about, you know, where the educational trends are going and where the performance metrics are for completions and for, you know, actually getting through those programs, a lot of a spotlight has gone on for-profit providers. But yet, I don't think that's a really accurate metric, because what you're discovering, it seems to me, are really strong providers, the Western Governors, the you know, Southern New Hampshire's, the, you know, University of Phoenix's. I mean, those that are highly regulated and highly attuned to delivering a quality education experience, you know, maybe for profit, but it's not the for profit or not profit that makes a difference. It's really the accountability for the results.
It's the accountability, Ron. I think we often, you know, using these labels are natural ways to increase bias around certain vendors or universities, because put all the universities aside, when we look at non-degree, there's so many are coming out of ed tech, and it's what are they doing and how are they creating this? So I think in a lot of ways, these biases that have been created are allowing us to look through an antiquated lens around how we measure quality. I mean, we know the quality matters, the Online Learning Consortium rubrics. I mean, there are people that have been doing this for decades based on research and theory, and we can measure those outcomes. So there's so much to watch, and I'm always interested in what's happening, and just always hope kind of the good voices can, and knowledgeable voices can outweigh the biased opinions.
Well, I think you're onto it in the sense that so many times people are now looking for very specific outcomes. I want to know these skills. I have this broad basic understanding or fundamentals education. Now I want to get more specific. And in our next episode, we're going to take a break here. I want to talk specifically about what you see as the trend in terms of micro learning. Is the traditional semester over as we know it? So to our listening and viewing audience, we're going to take a break here, and we're going to end on episode one and turn right around and bring you episode two with Jill Bubin from EdAssist on Disrupt Ed. So join us on our newsletter, join our community, which is growing amazingly with people who want to understand disruption and want to make that understanding pay for them in real dividends. Jill, thank you, and we'll be right back.